If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wowee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Welcome to the latest edition of the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. My name's Lauren Wood. I'm joined, as I am every week, by my magnificent colleagues, John Anderson, Mick Warner and Scott Gullen. Ando, we finally have a date. June 11th has been circled on the calendar.
Yeah, we do. It's certainly interesting. I was speaking to, as we all do, different people, and I'm obviously a bit older than you three. I'm not sure about 50-plus how much they've missed football. Now, you may all be aghast at that comment, but and I think a large part of that is just the general dissatisfaction with the spectacle of the game these days. I reckon a lot of people have missed suburban footy and kids' footy, but I'm just not sure. The AFL to me these days is as much, for many people, the event, go out, socialise, have a beer in the ball ring, whatever they do, as it is just to watch the game.
What I'm not going to miss, and I'm not sure it's going to be what we expect it to be, is this sort of hybrid game that's coming back with no crowds. What I've missed is real footy with 100,000, the talkback radio, you know, the issues of the week, your team doing well or badly for the first 37 years of my life. But, you know, that, I've missed that. But what it's going to look like in the next period, I'm not overly excited about it. I know we need it back. It'll be good to have it back. But I worry about, you know, how we're going to go with 17 weeks of soulless football.
It'll lose the novelty a little bit, won't it, Scotty? Because as Mick says, it's footy but not as we know it. You know, we're going to have four teams housed up on the Gold Coast, some of them not as willingly as others in the same resort. If you listen to our man Koshy, he's had a big couple of weeks. Koshy, hasn't he? But it's not quite going to be the same. But is that enough for us, Scotty?
Oh, I think it's enough, and I think what'll happen, we'll get used to it. Like round one, we're all like, "Oh, this is weird," and it was weird being at the game, hearing it, watching it. But we'll get into a rhythm. I mean, after 3 or 4 weeks, I reckon we'll all go, "Well, this is what it is. We accept it. We move on." Then we get into the wins and losses and barracking for our team. But there's going to be an adjustment period for everyone, players and fans.
You Mick, like the we know fake your feelings. Crowd noise?
Well, that's what I was just going to ask. I know your feelings on the 18-metre goal squares. The fake crowd noise was going to be next cab off the rank to throw straight to you, Mick. Have you heard it? What do you reckon?
Well, first of all, you can never compare the 18-metre goal square to fake crowd noise. I mean, that one was just an absolute lesson in idiocy, and this is more of a sort of a desperation to get some atmosphere. I don't like it personally. I think it's tacky, and you know they'll give it. Who's in charge of the volume? Who decides how good the goal is? You've got to really turn the crowd up, or just a little bit of a murmur because the 10 goals up. But it's going to be interesting to see how they work that.
What about the team that decides to follow the lead of the soccer in the Bundesliga with I think it's Borussia Mönchengladbach, which gets supporters to pay 20 quid, whatever, yeah. And they get a life-size photo of themselves, a headshot for that, and they've got 16,000 of them going to the stadium. Now, their stadiums don't hold as much as the MCG, as many, but I don't think that's the worst idea I've ever heard. And you can get,
it'd be great atmosphere from those cardboard cutouts.
I'm not saying that. Would you rather look – I think it'd be quite funny. I'd rather look at a headshot of some bloke like you, maybe.
An empty seat.
I mean, it works better. When you go to the Gabba and they've got their seats painted, they look better than an empty seat at the MCG does.
From what I've heard, they're going to have very tight camera angles of pretty much just on the ground. You won't get those big sweeping shots you saw in round one of the empty grandstand.
So when someone kicks goal of the year, they won't pan to the crowd to see a group deliberating. I don't know. I mean, why do they do that anyway? Why can't we see what the players do after Eddie Best kicked goal of the year? Isn't that more relevant?
The other idea I've heard is they're going to have a Google box or goggle box, whatever that thing is, where they'll actually have the supporters in the lounge room going off.
And don't do that, Michael.
Scotty and Al Payton and these sort of these diehard types.
Oh, no.
Al Payton will be out handing out hand of vote cards.
I'll be with him.
I think you might be different parties, you and Al. I think you're...
Oh, political parties, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Same
I'm all colours. For gimmicks, but surely we don't need to go to a fan's house to see them cheer a goal. And as Ando said, you'll miss the actual players' interaction.
Well, they're not allowed to high-five the players. So, you know, they have to sit 1.5 metres apart on the interchange. I mean, what a joke.
Well, talk us through the protocols, Mick. You've seen the 40, 50 pages? We've seen it on the front page of the papers today where the word intimacy and AFL players appearing in the bonking. Same sentence. I think everyone just goes, well, I'll let you say it, Scotty. I'm not really going to go there. But
it's the headline.
You've seen the document. How restrictive is life for AFL players?
It's extraordinary. And they have to be, you know, we have to respect what they're prepared to do to sacrifice their life, really. I mean, they've been told they've got to kick housemates out, and you know it's a big call for how many weeks is it? 20 weeks. I know you think they're soft, Ando, but they've taken a 50% pay cut, and they're not allowed to basically leave their house. It's a big ask that we are asking these blokes to do.
How do we police it, Michael?
Which part?
The love
lockdown?
I've no idea. I don't think it's possible. I don't think it's legal. Ethical.
Is there a dob in an AFL player line where you can ring and say, I was at this house and there was an AFL player there?
Well, this is a suggestion, isn't it? It's going to be dob in central. I mean, I can kind of see the argument a little bit in this new world order of, you know, dating sites and all the rest of it that, you know, and I think it was Eddie McGuire said on radio this morning that this isn't about, you know, long-term partnerships and all the rest of it. But the phrase he used was randoms. We can't have a whole bunch of randoms, you know, sort of strolling through the competition. From that side of things, I can sort of see how it is. But, Mick, you're exactly right. Like, it's just going to end up, you know, dobbing a footballer, 1-800, whatever, whatever.
Yeah. Well, what about in the back end of the season when you're 0-8 and
you're losing interest?
You've lost a lot of interest and you're stuck in some hub. It's going to be tough.
What about the hubs like we said in Queensland? How's this one, Mick? They're in a golf course and they play golf.
That's brutal.
You can't play golf and you can't sit within 1.5 metres of a teammate. But you can go out on the ground and you can tackle and you can spit, not deliberately spit, but phlegm will escape from your mouth next to someone's head, and that is allowed. But you sit, then you go back and you sit 1.5 metres apart. Hey, that is absolutely ludicrous. Tell me the medical reasoning behind that.
It's safe to say golf will be the first thing on the agenda. I would be stunned if there's not golfers playing golf within 3 days of arriving at the hub. Absolutely ram that home.
Lauren, it is a very dangerous sport for the, you know, biosecurity in golf it's severe. You know,
I believe you may have already hit the fairways. So
yes, no one was within 100 miles of me in the bushes at Peninsula. I was safe. I couldn't get COVID-19 in there.
What about your old mate John Burns, the club champion from a couple of years down at Peninsula?
Yeah, he's down there. I haven't seen him there, but I did. It's quite weird. You don't have to play your bunker shot, Scotty, or you can. You can get a preferred line in the bunker. Yeah,
I played my bunker shots. You just don't rake, isn't it?
Yeah, so you can pick the ball up and find a nice spot.
Oh, really?
Sort of within a foot of. You don't have to play to someone's foot.
That's like that's how Donald Trump plays all the time.
I didn't realise that.
Rocket Man.
Well, you were just playing out of a big foot crater, were you?
No, well, if I'm in the bunker, I just play it and don't rake it. I thought that was just how the world was.
You could move your ball in the bunker.
Oh, so you're a cheat from way back, Michael.
I'm actually very much a stickler. But anyway, so I had three or four shots out of each bunker, which is less than the five or six I usually have.
Oh, well, Mick being a stickler for tradition, who would have thought of the golf course and off it? What about, just a quick one before you move on to sort of more serious matters, how do we feel about the Amazon documentary crew potentially being allowed to sort of live in the hub with the West Coast Eagles?
Nothing's stopping them. They got in round one when no one was allowed to be near the players. Now they're in hubs when no one's allowed to be near the players. So whatever money they're paying Eddie McGuire, who's then offloading it to the AFL, they're getting their money's worth. They're getting access that no one can dream of.
Bit of a conflict of interest, isn't it, though? If you've got Eddie on the war cabinet and he's got some commercial arrangement in the hubs.
Well, clubs are told to only have X amount, 25, yet you can have three or four crews wandering around free and filming whoever they want.
Now, as I say, we've got plenty still to get through. We'll be catching up with Scotty very, very shortly for The Whisper. Ando, you caught up with Ed Curnow, so looking forward to hearing that one. And also your team of the last 50 years with North Melbourne. We know that this was going to be a tough one for you given how successful they were throughout the 90s, but the biggest story, you would have to say, over the last couple of days is that of Jack Stephen. I don't think anyone could have predicted on Sunday when he's sort of doing the lazy scroll through the Twitter feed on a Sunday morning that we'd be finding news that, of course, recruited to Geelong at the start of this season, was stabbed overnight on Saturday night. Nick Riewoldt spoke about his former teammate on Fox Footy Live on Monday night. Here's a little bit of what he had to say about the former Saint and, of course, many-time best and fairest winner.
He needs structure and routine. You know, he's a guy that at times has been sort of allowed to run a bit of his own program when he was at St Kilda and get home and surf and just was having that balance was really important. But it would appear that the lack of football and structure might have contributed to this situation. And obviously the details are pretty sketchy, but I guess, you know, idle hands at this sort of point in time without the structure and rigour of a football program has not been the answer for Jack.
Well, Ando, I mean, as we sit here today, Tuesday lunchtime, Jack is still in hospital at the Alfred. He hasn't required further surgery, but doesn't look like he'll be discharged for another couple of days. Refused to speak to police in recent days. So still so much to play out. We obviously hope that Jack's okay. But one of the stranger footy stories to have emerged in recent times.
Yeah, well, you don't expect. I can't think of an AFL player in my history who's been stabbed, Loz. So that's a first. I'm sure it has happened, but I can't think of it happening. Then we had Simon Lloyd saying that it was within a few centimetres of potentially being fatal. That's how serious it was. And then we have the very unusual situation of Jack Stephen himself refusing to speak with police. So as an outsider, and I can only guess at this, why would you refuse to speak with police? One reason could be that you were scared. You were attacked by someone who you just seriously felt still afraid of and didn't want to put them in. The other one may be that it was somebody you know and you don't want to put them into the police, and then it becomes a more of a domestic situation, which my understanding is that may be the case. There's obviously a lot to play out yet. If that is the case, what happens to Jack Stephen? Well, the main thing is Jack Stephen's going to be okay. Does he play football again this year? I would think physically he'll be able to play football, from what I understand. It's just a matter of mentally whether he's in the right space to be able to do that. But there's every likelihood that he still will be able to play football when round two resumes.
And it brings me to the sort of rather vexed purpose of the AFL Integrity Department here. So this is the same unit that just spent 4 days investigating a bunch of blokes running around on a golf course in the Barossa, kicking a Sharon, and it was a very heinous offence, and they were swiftly dealt with. Whereas in this one, they're saying that they're not investigating, that they're leaving it to the police. It can be confusing for a football supporter to know what the AFL thinks is bringing the game into disrepute or conduct unbecoming, whatever. It's just confusing to me what their purpose is. when you've got someone on the front of the paper in an incident like this.
But surely, this is a personal nature. Surely this has nothing
they
to
should
do with football.
Say that. They should say, well, none of the Lockie Hunter had nothing to do with football either when he poleaxed those cars. I mean,
but he broke the law, which is part of the players are bound by behavioural.
Refusing to speak to police.
It's not a good look.
So what's going on? I think there needs to be. Now, obviously, I think.
Well, he can't be suspended for getting stabbed.
I think they know what's happened. And if that's the case, they should say that this is a private matter and we have no further interest.
Well, I'd hope that's where it goes. You'd think that's where it goes. And he gets the counselling and everything he needs. I mean, I think it's a personal matter with a horrible end result that really hasn't got anything to do with his football.
Why don't they say that?
Yeah, well, I don't know why they haven't. That's the obvious move to
Geelong have said they don't know what's happened, didn't they?
But haven't they effectively said that? By the fact that they've said the integrity department won't be investigating, the police will. We'll leave it to the police. What more do they need to say?
Well, if they'd said that and explained, it's just been left hanging. I'm confused about where there's a line there for the AFL integrity department, and in this one, I don't think they know which side that they should be on. They should just explain it.
I mean, Jack Stephen, I saw his one game at Colac. And he was very good. He still wasn't physically ready, and he didn't get picked in round one because he had a little niggle after that game. But he clearly added pace, leg speed to that team and was going to play a crucial role. And my mail is his fitness was a lot better, but they still weren't sure whether he was completely ready because of the layoff and not training properly for 6 weeks. But it's going to be a little while longer before we see him now, obviously.
Another player who it's going to be a little while before we see them is Joe Danaher. Incredible.
The saga.
To think the saga rolls on. It's now 366 days, I believe, since he's played. He played last in round 9 of last year. And John Worsfold spoke this morning, basically saying that he's a fair way off playing, can't put a date on his return and couldn't answer whether he'll play in 2020. Brendan Goddard, Danaher's former teammate, shared his thoughts on the key forward's future on our friends Sacked podcast. Of course, the Herald Sun's Sacked a couple of weeks ago. Here's what Goddard had to say then.
Joe Danaher, you talked about rehabbing and clearly he's got to work harder. Do you get the feeling he's going to go to Sydney?
Yeah. It's almost like the perfect setting for him now to go, isn't it? Because it's almost forgotten about. Yeah. He might, if this season doesn't eventuate or it's kind of compromised in a way, and he was so set on it, I think, last year that now no footy's been played or the club hasn't had a chance or the team hasn't had a chance to kind of get him back.
Mm. And then, Scotty, as I say, Woosha spoke again this morning. Now, he sort of said that the medical department, even they've been pretty stumped with the issue that he's facing. It's unprecedented. They've never seen anything like it. You know, it's unique. We're taking it week by week, all the rest of it. And the phrase that they're using is linear, which sort of screams footy department, doesn't it? A word like linear
when they're talking about.
Well, they're just sort of saying that his progression won't naturally just go steadily up. He won't just improve like that. But, geez, if we're sitting here having just had 2 months off, preparing to play a game in 3 weeks' time, and they still can't say whether he'll play this year.
We're playing the long game here. Put yourself in the Danaher management shoes. He's going to play for Sydney next year. The long game is get yourself slowly but surely right physically. I mean, it's hard to believe he hasn't had a big workload over the past 2 months. He's just been isolating by yourself. Surely if this thing's going to cure it with time, there would have been improvement during that time.
How good a footballer is he, Scotty? Or Mick or Loss?
Well, I don't think we've seen enough consistently. He's clearly a match winner on his day. Physically, he's a freak. We've seen that, but I don't think he's done it consistent enough for my love of him.
Yeah, he's way too inconsistent, isn't he? And his kicking is a bit wayward. They should have traded him, you're right. They had a huge, was it two first-round picks that they?
Yeah, it was.
I mean, you don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Whoever that GWS player was who saw Joe Danaher getting into Tom Haley's house. Or
he was in the car in traffic, wasn't he?
He's caused a hell of a lot of trouble for both clubs. But I agree with you. He'll be at Sydney. Yeah.
And he'll be miraculously ready to go round one next year. Guarantee it. We'll look back on this
date. It'd be pretty handy forward line alongside Big Buddy.
Buddy, oh, it'd be amazing. Reed. No, Reed needs to get out. It's time he went and found a club where he can play consistently.
I'd say the best of Joe Danaher, the player he resembles most, is probably Buddy Franklin.
Yeah, absolutely, Edo. Yeah. Athleticism, booming left foot.
Plays well up the ground.
Our colleague Mark Robinson delved into the world of the AFL Hall of Fame in the Monday Herald Sun about who should be the 29th legend to be named. We're due for one this year. Obviously, Wayne Carey is potentially up for it. There's a few other names thrown into the mix. Who do you reckon should be our 29th legend?
I know Rob argued that it's not chronological, and I understand that, but I hate the thought that somebody really deserving from the 60s, 70s, 80s, time will just go past them and we'll just forget somebody like... And Rob named about 8 or 9 players who could be the next legend. One that he didn't put in was Bruce Doyle. I'm glad he put Michael Tuck in, but he didn't put Bruce Doyle. Bruce Doyle, to me, now, I've got absolutely no doubt that the people who select this, they take into consideration whether that person will turn up to accept the honour. Now, I think Bruce Doyle would, but he's not going to say a heck of a lot if he does. Gary Ablett Sr., who's an obvious contender, and Robbo named him as the best player of the modern era 2 weeks ago, and then 2 weeks after naming him as the best player, said that Wayne Carey should be inducted.
So that's a bit of a backhander.
I think Mark did that based on the fact that what's happened off the field may still weigh heavily on the judges' minds in the case of Gary Ablett. But
Is that in the criteria, though?
No, clearly it's not, Mick, because I could list people who are in the AFL Hall of Fame who have been in prison, who have done things that are not great in the public eye, but yet they're in the Hall of Fame. So clearly it's not. And it isn't, actually. It's what they do on field. But with, I'm not sure. Wayne Carey, yep, Wayne Carey, of course he'd be deserving, totally deserving. But does he deserve to be in ahead of Jason Dunstall? Kicked, 1,257 goals or whatever it is. Won 4 best and fairest, totally unselfish player. Ablett, we know. And Doyle might be the greatest, some would argue the greatest. David Park and Robert Wall say he's the best defender they've seen. Well, they'll do me. They're better judges than I am by a fair way, I would have thought. And so he's just a name. But, yeah, it's one of those ones. It comes up. It's a funny panel, the All Australian selectors. Yeah, there's a couple of names there, Scotty. You think how they got on this kick? Seriously, yeah.
Can you elaborate? Because I think I know the answer, but I'm probably too scared.
I can read it out for you.
You read the names out. That's you should, Scotty.
Richard Goyder.
Who's that?
Paul Marsh.
Played in the Waffle.
It's Paul Marsh.
He's the player's boss. The player's boss has always been on that.
Paul Marsh is the ex-cricketer.
Michelangelo Rucci, former.
Next.
Former. Journo.
Is it Journo? Yep.
Karen Lyon, former age Journo. Bruce McAvaney, fair enough, Doyen. Tanya Armstrong from WA, who's, I think she's still in the media somewhere. And David Parkin. Coaching, great.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not going to say what I want to say because I'm too gutless.
Nah. I'll say what I think.
Seriously.
I'd like, not the legend. I agree with you on the legend, though, and I'd like it to be someone with some grey matter in their hair rather than a young bloke. But you got to wait for your legend status. But I'd think Ben Cousins should be in the Hall of Fame. And I've said this a lot and you just said off-field has nothing to do with it. I think that even though Ben let himself down again recently, that it would be great for the game to wrap its arms around Ben and honour him because he's a Hall of Famer. His career says it, doesn't it? That we honour your career. And you've got problems, or are we just going to leave this guy out forever because he's a drug addict? Is that basically what we're saying?
So that's the precedent they've set previously.
They run themselves around in circles.
No, I agree. I agree with your sentiments.
He's He's a walk-up Hall of Famer, and it's more the message from the game to him. I know that no one will agree. The vast majority will disagree, but I think it'd be a great gesture, and I think he deserves it.
It should be based on what you do on the footy field. I'm not that phased about what sort of character. And then you got that judging panel that we just talked about, judging the character of people, where they get in or out of a Hall of Fame when their incredible talents were loved for many years and were outstanding. I think it should be all on what happened on the field.
Absolute senior is in the Hall of Fame. Right. So
yeah, correct. This is a legend elevation.
Everyone said he's the best player they've ever seen.
I know. So let's just get him.
So he's a legend.
Kerry rang me yesterday. He's got a 1970 Ford Mustang that he wants to sell. So if anyone's in the market for a Mustang, Gaz is trying to sell it.
Seriously. How much does he want for it?
Oh, I'm not sure. I think the price you mentioned to me seems somewhat inflated. It is an unusual car. There's something about a left-hand steering. I don't know.
It's got it from America.
It came out from the States, I think. Yeah, the real deal. But anyway, Gary, would he turn up? I don't think he would, but I can't answer on his behalf. So I doubt.
No one's turning up this year, Andy.
Yeah, it'll be all.
Well, that's a good point, Mick. It's the time.
Isn't that funny? They held off the Simon Black's induction into the Hall of Fame because he couldn't go because he was on Survivor, and now no one's going to be able to go at all.
He misses again.
Perfect time to induct Gary Ablett as a legend.
And just get him to film a 2-minute thing going, thank you, and play that, and we're done.
In the 78 Mustang.
Yeah. Exactly. Highlights package that works. It goes for an hour and a half.
It can be the ad for the car and the acceptance speech in one. Oh. There's no look, I'm thinking of that Seinfeld episode of driving around in John Voight's car where there was conjecture about whether it was actually John Voight's car. There'd be no conjecture it was Gary Ablett's if we had the vision of him actually sitting and actually accept the award. There you go.
I've got a mate who's a criminal barrister who Mick knows because he went to the same school as Mick. A little bit older, Jeffrey, and years and years ago, he had a friend, Diana King, who worked at Channel 7, and he asked, he's a mad Geelong supporter, could he get a couple of highlights of Gary's career? And Diana went to one of the technos of Channel 7, an editor who put together, you may have seen it, Scotty, it's about an hour and a half of Gary highlights. It was done, he was still playing when they did it, just absolutely extraordinary. Some of it without commentary, but it's just the best. Someone should produce it actually.
They should show it in the next 3 weeks.
Yeah. I've been watching the Tiger Woods. Have you been watching the Tiger Woods channel, guys, on Fox? I mean, his highlights are unbelievable. There's one majors you forgot about. It's just, he's a freak. I think he's gone past Jordan actually.
Oh, topical discussion.
What, in terms of being a Tish bloke?
No, well, we just spoke about how your personality has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, no, we just
and
focused
now you've
on
included it. You, come on, Andy, be consistent.
He's not been inducted into the Hall of Fame, Tiger Woods. We've had this argument before, Mick, you and I, about Tiger Woods, and I've got absolutely and Jordan. So, have you watched that whole?
Spoil it. No,
I've got two episodes to go.
Okay,
let's park it.
Save it for next week. Scotty, just before we get to the whisper, you know that the Super Score has a very special place in my heart. Two items caught my eye in today's edition. Yes. What happened with Morgan Mitchell at Collingwood?
Oh, this is outrageous. Eddie Maguire stole Olympic Park from the athletics community and turned it into his Collingwood playhouse.
Hang on, he was on the board of Athletics Australia when it happened.
He was on the board, Michael. Do you remember that? Like, and then amazingly, he was off it after the deal was struck. So Olympic Park has been, you know, Cathy Freeman, all the greats have run around that area on that sort of dirt down there. And Morgan Mitchell was training there. She's Olympian, one of our best middle distance stars, has been training there for weeks on the outside track and was going about her thing calmly yesterday. And the security guard kicked them off because Collingwood were back. And apparently they're erecting fences today to ensure people like Morgan and that can't.
Sold it. It's a public place.
Well, that's a rule. AFL rules have got to be an exclusive venue, doesn't it?
Well, they've got to find somewhere else to train.
Eddie,
you can't fence off a public park.
I know a bit more, Scotty. I know a bit about this situation because my boys both train at that ground, running. I'm talking about. They train regularly there during the at season. They train there Tuesday, Thursday nights with a lot of other runners. That is actually not run by Collingwood. It's run by the Melbourne City Council. And part of the deal for Collingwood to have that ground is for
it's public also, access.
Yeah, public access. That's quite right. And it was seen that some amateurs games would be played there under lights at different times, which I think has only happened possibly once. But the runners, I'm really surprised by that because typically you would have a number of runners, probably up to 40, running around while footy is training. I've certainly seen the VFL team and the Collingwood's women's side training there while the runners have been there. So that for that for Morgan last night, and another runner was with her, I think, wasn't there, to be stopped, I don't think that'll become the norm. I'll be very surprised if it does. And I would wait for more to happen on that one.
It's going to become the norm if they build a fence around it.
They can't do that.
The AFL wants them to build a fence.
Well, because of this is because of Corona, not because of the Melbourne City Council, though. Well, what's the difference having two runners?
I've seen 1,000 people running around the tan, so every morning on the way into work. I sometimes think I should do it myself. But why the hell isn't there a fence around the tan then? What are we talking about, Scotty?
The AFL said you've got to have a sheltered venue, and it's not because it's open to the public. So Eddie's going to put a fence around it to say it's now ours, which is illegal because the council controls it as Ando. But Eddie, some rort will happen. They'll sort it out.
You might see Morgan running around the tan, just given that she can't run around at Olympic Park. It seems like a bit of a strange one. But the other one, Scotty, burner accounts.
Talk me through
it is.
I didn't use those words, Loz, but...
Well, the Twitter sphere is a buzz. Correct. You featured said account in question in the Super Score today. Take us from the top.
Channel 7's Tom Brown, a dear friend to the podcast, has had an interesting couple of weeks. He may have got the Adelaide penalty slightly amiss there, and he copped a fair bit for that. But then over the weekend, an account under the name of Jimmy Jones popped up and was effusive in its praise for Tom. And fair to say, his colleagues from around the industry were very quick to jump onto this. And the suggestion is, who was behind the real face of Jimmy Jones? And Tom denies that he's got involvement, but it's certainly got people talking.
Well, this can easily be rectified, Scotty. It's a bit like people, Lando, who write their own Wikipedia pages. I think that can be traced back through the technological, Jimmy Jones needs to present himself as a bona fide human.
He's been on Twitter for 2 weeks, Jimmy, so he's a newcomer.
You're listening to the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. We'll be back shortly after this quick message. You got a whisper for us?
I think you'll find, with all the rules and everyone's being consulted about everything in this new era, that a prominent senior coach may have got a few people, other clubs' noses bent out of place. His influence in basically getting his own way. And I think a few other clubs and coaches are getting a bit tired of the one-way traffic with these sort of AFL wanting the coach's input, and seems to be one person's input more than a group scenario.
All right, maybe one for us to discuss while Ando catches up with Carlton's Ed Curno.
Welcome, Ed, back from your first hit out of training. How did it go today?
Yeah, it was great to get back in and train on Icon Park. I suppose if anyone's done well out of COVID-19, which not many people have, the grass has certainly benefited from no one on it. It's a beautiful deck today, so it was exciting to be out there with our group today.
Who determines your actual group, Ed? Is it done on someone, I know you're a really good runner, so they match you up with blokes who are good runners or with younger players? How's it work?
We've gone with a real mix. Forwards, backs, mids, and then experienced and younger players. That was put together by T. With a theory, I could only imagine that if one goes down, our whole group goes down, and we don't lose the whole back line group. So yeah, it's a bit of a mix, and I think that works really well.
Take me through what you would have typically done in the past 8 weeks. I know you're a running machine anyway, but what would your day involve in terms of training?
Yeah, so, I mean, running is one of my outlets, but we've all had our program from the football club to solo. I really enjoy the kind of time away from the club to almost, you know, tweak the program and make it suit your own life and how you feel day to day. So, I suppose for myself, I've been isolating with my wife Emily and two young kids, and so I exercise around sleep times and of the kids and also being near the ocean. So I'd surf a lot, and then I just run when I felt like it, and go into lawn and do some sprints and kicking in lawn. But then, yeah, spending most of my time running through the bush or along the Great Ocean Road and getting the odd surf in.
I must need to get my eyes tested, because I reckon I saw someone who looked very like you about 6 weeks ago training at the Arch Enemies ground at Collingwood. That couldn't have been right, could it?
No, I'm trying to think. I had a I did a Melbourne session. No, I don't think it would have been. I went down to Collingwood Harriers Athletics track for one session, and I enjoyed that. I love being able to. I think other players have enjoyed it as well, just having the flexibility to train when it suits you and what you got going on in the world, because everyone's got different things on at the moment, more so than ever. But then also being able to mix up locations and go to an ash track or go to a different footy ground or, you know, just run into the bush or along the creek. It's been quite enjoyable.
Look, just for your backstory, you were taken by Adelaide number 40 in the 2008 rookie draft. Played with Glenelg that year, delisted, went to Box Hill, had two really good years with Box Hill, and got picked up by Carlton as a rookie 2013. You've since run fourth in a BNF in 15, third in 2018, and second in 2019. So you're a really good story of resilience and achievement. Just give me one thing for those young men who are trying to get onto an AFL list now, and it's probably going to be harder than it ever has before. What's one piece of advice you would give them, Ed?
Yeah, right. Well, tough question, because probably the piece of advice I give is the advice I probably that puts you in a couple of holes sometimes, I suppose, or you know, also can come back to bite you. But I think the thing I've always worked on is just having a nice balanced life, so that. Footy's always been my passion, but I've always developed a life where I feel okay if I didn't have it, and in a strange way, that's really helped my footy. And I think I only learnt that through having a setback, and then I suppose my parents were always pretty big on making sure I had other things in my life, so. Yeah, I would say love it, but set up your life so that you can love something else as well and be just as passionate about that too, because as everyone knows, and even more so at the moment, it's a fickle environment, and it's awesome when you're in it, but anything can happen, and it certainly doesn't last forever.
You know that, because you're now at age 30, one of the veterans at Carlton. You've seen a few coaches come and go and a lot of players come and go. The feeling at the place now, you've come off almost a second pre-season. How would you compare it with previous years as to how it looks at Carlton for 2020?
A lot of optimism and enthusiasm, that's for sure. I suppose we've been on a pretty hard road, and I think most people would recognise that it's not easy to put in a heap of work and get beaten every week. We started to turn that at the back end of last year, and the players really felt that. So, yeah, look, we're all pretty keen to get back into games, because we really think we're a red-hot chance at winning most games and want to give it a solid crack. And it's hard not to think that with the way we played at the back end of last year, and then I suppose the competitive individuals we've got at the footy club now at a young age that are driving the training it on the track, I suppose.
Do you know, obviously your younger brother Charlie's sadly been ruled out for the year. Do you know where Harry Mackay's at the moment?
Yeah, so I was in Harry's group today, in our group of eight, and yeah, there was no restrictions to the way he trained, so he did everything we did, and he looks like he's moving really well, so it's pretty exciting for the Carlton community to see the big H up and running.
Any other update on other injuries, Ed, such as maybe Matty Cruiser? What do you know what the plan is for him?
I'm not too sure with Cruz. I've had a couple of chats over the break, but we didn't really talk too much about footy. I dare say he spent the time with his new one in the family. So, yeah, he wasn't in my group today either. So, sorry, John, I really don't have much on that one.
With yourself, you're 30-year-old now. Hopefully you've got, you know, 3-4 years. The way you've looked after yourself, there'd be a chance and you can experience some real success at Carlton. But life after footy for Ed Kerner, what's it look like at this stage?
Yeah, so 3 to 4 years would be great. Cheers, John. I reckon about 4 or 5 years ago I started putting a lot more effort. I've always studied, but put a bit more effort into work experience. Finally knocked off a degree last year, which was great, and then decided to start another one just because I've been hooked on it. So I've done a Master of Project Management, and now I'm doing my Master's in Finance in Melbourne. And I've worked for the last year and a half with a project management, funds management, property development type role with a company called IPG. And they've been fantastic with me to allow me the flexibility to work there and whilst I follow my footballing journey still. So, yeah, I've loved that and that's been a great experience. And I'd probably, look to continue that role, I suppose. And then, you can never fully understand what the transition's going to be like. I can only talk to my friends that have done it. But I'm just trying to, I suppose, have as much skills and experience so that when that does happen, I'm really comfortable and I don't have to jump into anything. And basically, I'm out with the question of really not knowing exactly what my career will look like post-footy, and I'm kind of okay with that.
And sing it one and all. Join in the chorus. North Melbourne's on the ball. Good old North Melbourne, they're champions, you'll agree. North Melbourne is the team that plays to win for you and me.
Well, Ando, the best of the best has featured in recent weeks, the best teams of the last 50 years, 1970 to 2020. You've made the trip to Arden Street for this week. Now, none of us have seen this team as yet, so we're relying on you to take us through from the back line. They've been pretty successful over that 50 years too. I reckon it was a tough one.
You've had two big times. You've had 1970s when they won two flags. Of course, their first flag in 1975. They played in grand finals in 74, 75, 76, two in 77 with the draw and 78. And then, of course, in the 1990s when they played in all those prelims and grand finals as well. Back pocket, there's someone you all know pretty well, I would say, in one back pocket who works in the media at Fox Footy called David King, who was, I reckon, a two-time All-Australian. I thought Byron Pickett's in the 22, has to be somewhere, but just put Kingy ahead of him because of his longevity at North Melbourne. Full-back Scotty's easy enough.
David Dench
kick ahead of Mick Martin is unlucky. Mick Martin was a very fine player, but doesn't have the dash of David Dench. The other back pocket is, he was a shin boner of the century, 5'11", Glenn Archer. Halfback line is very much a throwback to the 70s. John Rantell, who came to them to the 10-year. Rantell's as good a small defenders I've ever seen. Ross Glendinning in centre half back, picked himself. Peter Stewart's best work was in the 60s. And Brent Croswell has to be there somewhere. It's just an extraordinary play, Brent Croswell. On a wing, you've got one of the greats on a wing. Who would you people think of?
Keith Gregg.
Anthony Stephens has to be in the 18. He can go in the centre. And I reckon Wayne Swass, the North Melbourne people, Carey rates him enormously highly, Wayne Swass. So happy that Jimmy Bush has to be in the side. He's not on a wing. He played a lot of footy at half forward flank. Obviously, Carey's in half forward. I've got Sam Kekovic. He was a player I saw as a kid up at Myrtleford back in the 60s before he took North Melbourne by storm before a knee injury shortened his career. Corey McKernan. Okay, he didn't achieve what he should have achieved in terms of longevity, but by crikey, his best 2 or 3 years were right there. I've got Malcolm Blight at full forward ahead of John Longmire. Blight has to be the 18. Longmire would be very unlucky. And Boomer Harvey, another forward pocket's pretty obvious pick. Ruck, Gary Dempsey's the best ruckman I've seen at North Melbourne. Ruck Rover in the old was their premiership captain, their first premiership captain, Barry Davis, just a beautiful footballer, Davis. And Rover would be clear-cut Barry Cable, leaving Byron Pickett, Adam Simpson on the bench. I'd have Jimmy Cracker on the bench. I love Jimmy as a footballer. And Arnold Brightus. But there's players like Drew Petrie, Peter Bell, John Blakey, Phil Cracker. There's a lot of good footballers aren't in that side. And John Longmire is probably as good as anyone. But, yeah, it's a powerful side, as you'd expect, with a team that's been in so many grand finals.
Great club. They really were a great club. I love North as a growing up as a kid. I always had a lot of respect for them. Maybe lost their way a bit in the Brayshaw era, but one guy, Ando, who brought that club together, that list, is Ron Joseph. He's an absolute football legend who, him and Barras, he got Barras, but he and Alan Aylett really took that club by the throat, didn't they, in the early 70s and late 60s and built it to that powerhouse that it was.
Ronnie Joseph, I think, was 21 or something when he started this career of North Melbourne. Other players, unlucky to miss out there, would include Brady Rawlings, really undersold type of player. Shannon Grant was a footballer.
Norm Smith
medalist, yeah. They got guys like Craig Scholl. He was a smooth mover, wasn't he, Craig Scholl? Mm. Matthew Larkin could play footy. Andrew Swallow. Yeah, they're pretty rich in talent, but I'm confident with the players I've gone for that they would win a few games, those particular boys. So next week we get to the Tigers, Loz.
Oh, hang on.
Who goes in the centre? Ian Stewart, Jeff Raines,
Paul Broderick.
Good left foot, Paul Broderick. Yeah.
I think it's fair to say that Dusty's right up there with KB and Royce Hart as the greatest Tiger ever. So I suspect he's in the guts.
He could ruck Rove or Rove, I suppose, couldn't he? But Rover's going to be Guy Waitman and KB. So, yeah,
okay.
Jeff Raines. I love Jeff Raines as a
player. Oh, yes.
Yeah, wing for him.
Another great addition. Thanks, boys, for joining us for the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. We'll see you all at heraldsun.com.au and in the Herald Sun each and every day. And back at the footy very, very soon. We're all on the countdown till June 11. So we'll be here with you each and every week wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you next week.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.